Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Collegiately speaking.
Walks into the end zone. Punches to the end zone.
This is Collegiately Speaking. With the voice of Northwestern football and basketball, Dave Enning, and former Northwestern star quarterback, Dan Persa. It's Collegiately Speaking. Let's go.
And welcome to another edition of Collegiately Speaking. Dave Enning here, Dan Persa, former Wildcat quarterback, joining us. We join you each week with a look at college football, focusing on the Northwestern Wildcats and the Big Ten. And that's had not been an easy topic this week because the Wildcats find themselves 1-2. This was a promising stretch for them, coming off the win in Dublin, Ireland over Nebraska, coming home to play three non-conference games at home. And so far, they're 0-2 at Ryan Field. And I guess it goes without saying, Dan, you got to win home games, non-conference games, but especially if you're a Power 5 team playing an FCS school, as they were this past weekend against Southern Illinois. But to fall to 1-2 with that loss to the Salukis, who I thought played really well and won it 31-24. But that's a tough one. That's one you got to shake off quickly, because that can kind of linger, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I've fortunately never been through losing to an FCS team, but I'm sure a lot of the guys are just embarrassed, right, for a variety of reasons. And, you know, we talked about in the prior show of the former FCS teams, beating a lot of big-time programs and the parity in college football. And then we got, you know, smacked with an example of it. To your point, I thought the Salukis played really well and frankly out-coached and outplayed us. And deserved a win. It wasn't really a fluke, which is a little bit scary for Northwestern fans. And they just seemed like they wanted the game more. They played harder. I get, as a player, kind of playing down to a lesser opponent in the FCS, but you got to come ready to play. I think, you know, there were some injuries on the defensive side of the ball, but Holinsky didn't have a great game, and he's basically regressed since the Nebraska game. And then, you know, you had Evan Hull turn the ball over again. So I think it was just a hard game to watch. It was kind of Northwestern fans dying a slow death, and they really need to get it going, right? Yep. Because these last two opponents, you know, while decent, it's only to get uphill from here. Miami of Ohio is a good team, and then you get into Big Ten play. So they got to get the ship turned around, and hopefully Fitz can do that. But it hasn't been great signs the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, this turnover thing is troubling, because that was a big problem for them last year, almost two dozen turnovers on the season, and now here they've had, what, 7 in 2 games, and this past week 4, with 2 Holinsky interceptions and 2 fumbles, and one of them by Holinsky and the other one Evan Hull for the second week in a row, and he has a bit of guy who's turned the ball over very much. So that's something they got to get stopped right away, because you certainly don't want to see that become the kind of thing that continues and maybe becomes a little bit of a habit.
Right, and you're just not going to win games turning the football over. Whether it's, I mean, you can get away with one turnover or two turnovers here or there, but to consistently turn the ball over more than 2 times, you're just not going to win games in the Big Ten. Turnover ratio is one of the most important things in college football in general. And, you know, if they continue to do that, they're just going to be playing uphill the rest of the season, and the team's really just not built for that. No college football team is. So protecting the balls, I'm sure, fits his number one goal, and they got to get that shirt up quickly.
And obviously some issues defensively as well. They gave up to a team which had been struggling, about 350 yards of offense. Maybe that number in and of itself doesn't sound that bad, but it's kind of like when they gave up plays, and again, some big plays at the most inopportune times, and it just seems like that's kind of the way it's been going for this team. They had a bunch of guys out on defense, especially in the secondary. 3 of their 4 starters were out of that game. They played a bunch of young guys who really hadn't seen the field very much in significant playing time, and saw it last week. So I guess from that standpoint, it's good for them to go through that. It's kind of a recurring theme from last year, right, when a lot of guys played for the first time and were kind of trying to figure things out. It's good if the starters come back, if the veterans are back in there and those guys aren't asked to do too much. But seemed like last week was way too much of a learning experience going on for a lot of guys. And hopefully I credit Fitz not wanting to pin it all on those guys, because that's really not fair. But at the same time, it definitely hurt them. And you could see the results, and you could see that Southern Illinois had more success offensively than I think people expected them to have.
Yeah, and I think the troubling sign, and obviously playing young guys, you're going to have mistakes. But I still think it's kind of the linebacker position. They just look slow. They just look a step slow. You know, I don't know if it's a read and react thing. I don't know if it's a pure speed and conditioning thing. But it just doesn't look like they're seeing the gaps and reacting to the ball and running down tackler or running down ball carriers like we saw a couple years ago with the likes of Patty Fisher and Gallagher and those guys. And the defense just seems a little bit uninspired at times, which again is another troubling thing. You know, we talked with a couple people last week about, you know, the defense really just kind of reacting to the offense and getting their fire from the offense, which, you know, you want them, I understand that point, but you want them to kind of play in their own world and play in a silo and be self-starters, right? And be engaged from the beginning of the game, because, you know, all three games, the defense has started really slow and you know, then the offense is there digging out of a hole. So I just think they need to be more prepared coming into the game, start faster, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and wake up a little bit. This past game wasn't a wake-up call. I don't know what will be.
Well, let's bring in a guy who's watched the Wildcats quite a bit, both on the practice field and also in games, and that's Louis Vaquer, who's the publisher of the Wildcat Report, the Northwestern site at rivals.com. And I guess we've kind of hit on some of the key notes here, Louis, as far as this team. You were out there. I saw you at Ryan Field on Saturday, as per usual. And what's your take on what we saw, not only in that game, but the last two games?
Yeah, it was a dark day in Evanston, wasn't it? It was a tough one to swallow, I think, especially, you know, for the fans. Certainly on my message board, there was a lot of outrage. But I think you guys hit on a lot of the same things, right? The defense has given up big plays consistently, and they're turning the ball over, right? So the last 2 weeks, they've turned the ball over seven times. The turnover ratio is 7-2, and it's just awfully hard to win that way, especially, you know, even against FCS opponents. They're going to make you pay, and that's exactly what happened on Saturday. They turned it over four times. They gave up a couple big plays, and, you know, there they were. They got saddled with a loss. And, you know, this has happened quite a bit to Fitz, right? This is his third loss to an FCS team. And, you know, my guess, I don't think there's a whole lot of coaches that have three of those. You know, they don't last long enough typically. So this has happened from time to time. We'll see if he can, you know, he's turned teams around after a few weeks before. We'll see if he...
Yeah, well, as you pointed out, I think on his Zoom call with the media on Monday, I think the 2016 team, the 2018 team, which ended up 1-3 and won the Big Ten West by three games. So, yeah, they've been down this road before and been able to kind of find a path back out of it. But I thought it was interesting, Louis. I think you said, how do you rate the ship? And his response was, what? The ship isn't not right.
Yeah, he said the ship is fine. We just had, you know, we didn't win a couple games, which that was kind of a shocking statement. But, you know, that's what I wrote about this week, is that Fitz is going to Fitz. right? He's gonna be the same guy, win or lose, and he's been in those shoes before. And you know, what did he talk about? And when I asked him that question, he talked about they got to be more consistent, they got to be disciplined in their preparation, and they got to take care of the football. It's the old platitudes. Now, like you mentioned, in 2016, they started 0-2. They lost to a MAC team and an FCS team. That was their last loss to an FCS opponent. It was 2006 against Illinois State, and they were 0-2. And they, you know, they won. They went 5-4 in the Big Ten. Wound up winning a Penn State Bowl. 2018, they were 1-3. Had that ugly loss to Akron, which was a 4-8 MAC team at home. They turned that around. They won 7 straight Big Ten games. Got to the big, you know, they won the West, got to the Big Ten title game, won the Holiday Bowl. So he has done this before. Now, there's been a couple times where they haven't, right? You look at 2019, 2021, they had slow starts and they never turned the corner. They never improved and they finished 3-9. So the jury's still out. We'll see if they can, I guess, right the ship is not the phrase he wants to use, but we'll see if he can turn things around in a couple weeks and kind of salvage the season here.
Yeah, thanks again, Louis, for joining us. I agree. I think you know, Fitz has done it in the past, but to your point, it's gone both ways in the past, and I'm not really sure. It's still yet to be seen if they have the players like they did in 2016 and 2018 and, the leaders that they had in those teams with guys like Clayton Thorson there. I'm just not sure if those guys are there right now. So hopefully they're developing that. One question I have for you is you're probably more in tune with how this affects recruiting and kind of Fitz's ability to recruit and how it affects the current recruits that are committed. What's your sense on losses like this and how they you know, help or hurt the pipeline of former or Northwestern players of the future?
Yeah, well, they certainly don't help, right? I mean, that's never going to be the case. And, you know, especially a loss like that one, Southern Illinois, and here they are, they're 1-2. They're coming off of a 3-9 season last year. What direction are they going? But so far, you know, I keep in touch with several of the recruits, and everybody's still on board, and they still believe. And remember, this class, I mean, right now, Fitz has 5 4 stars in the class right now, the most he's ever had. And they are, you know, they committed to him coming off of a 3-9 season. So, you know, that wasn't the biggest, you know, they're looking to the future and they believe in Fitz and, you know, they go to school because they pick Northwestern because of the academics and things like that. So I don't think, you know, wins and losses aren't going to be a deciding factor for them, but it's something they're still going to weigh. And as the, you know, if this season takes a turn or doesn't take a turn and ends up like, you know, where they're 3-9 again or something like that, I think you will see some defections. I mean, that's kind of unavoidable that they'll look at the direction of the program and look at some of the other programs that may have offered them. And, you know, one or two of them could jump ship. But I think, you know, Fitz, you know, what they sell isn't necessarily wins and losses. And I think that they're on board for now anyway.
Louis, I appreciate the time. It's always good to check in with you. You've got a good perspective on it. I think you and I have been around those Monday sessions with Fitz probably as long as anybody who's in that room right now. So, yeah, you know, we've kind of been down this road before, and it's a tough stretch coming up. This is a big game against a MAC opponent on Saturday, Miami of Ohio, which has great history, great tradition, and has a little bit of history of success against the Wildcats. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're 6-3 all time. I remember that 2003 game where they came in and pasted Northwestern. I think it was 44-14. They had Ben Roethlisberger on that team.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're struggling a little bit. They got a backup quarterback. Their offense is struggling, but you know, it's the way things are going. I think it's going to be a dogfight. You know, I think it's going to be a tight game, and Northwestern is going to have to execute, take care of the football, and do all those kinds of things to win.
Appreciate the time. We'll see you out there Saturday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. That's Louis Vacare, publisher of Wildcat Report. And, boy, you look at the schedule. You've got the Miami Redhawks Saturday night, 6:30 at Ryan Field. And then you plunge right back into Big Ten play. And you talk about a gauntlet, Dan. And I know we don't get too far ahead, and who knows what's going to happen week to week. But a week from Saturday at Penn State, then you come home and play Wisconsin. Then you go to Maryland and Iowa back-to-back following a bye week on the 15th. And Maryland looks really good and improved. And Iowa, we're going to talk more about them in just a moment. And then you come home and play Ohio State. So this is really not going to be an easy month plus for the Wildcats, and definitely this game against Miami, even though it's a game playing at home against a MAC team, you certainly hope you'll be able to win it. I just can't see right now how you look at it and say it's going to be anything but, as Louis said, a dogfight.
No, I agree. I think Miami of Ohio is probably licking their chops after that last loss. And then to your earlier point, you know, the Big Ten schedule is probably as hard as it's been in a long time. I don't know if those ESPN percentage chance of winning stats matter, but I don't think Northwestern is over 50% until they get to Illinois, you know, the last game of the season. So they're most likely going to be underdogs for pretty much every one of those games. Damn. So like you said, it's a true gauntlet after Miami, Ohio. So they really just need to kind of shore things up, get a good win against Miami, and move forward.
Yeah, take it from there, try to get to 2-2 and see what happens after that. And they are, and the one thing, and this is a true statement, they're 1-0 in the Big Ten West. And so, you know, they've got that going for them. And you can't really overstate the importance of getting an early division win, because that is something that could help set them up for future success. But first things first, Miami this week. Saturday, probably like a lot of people, I got home late Saturday evening, and I turned on Big Ten Network to watch the final drive, their late night wrap up show, and I see a crawl on the bottom of the screen saying that the Iowa Nevada game is in a delay. That's almost, I don't know, 11:45 p.m. at this point, and I knew the game was supposed to start at 6:30. I also know there were some weather, there were some storms around Saturday night in this area. So I'm watching, and then sure enough, the players come out. They're getting set to kick it off again around midnight, and then they go back in. And the first person I thought of was my friend Gary Dolphin, the play-by-play voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes. And I'm thinking, he's sitting there at Kinnick Stadium. He's probably got a tee time for early Sunday morning. And I don't...
Actually, I just fell out of bed about 10 minutes ago from Saturday night, guys. So yeah, really? I think I'm caught up on my sleep.
Rip Van Dolphin, huh? Getting up after that. Gary, thanks for joining us. So what time... Now, we get to the stadium a couple hours before kickoff, as a rule, those of us who do this. And So that's, what, 4:30 in the afternoon, you're at Kinnick Stadium?
Yeah, I do a pregame, a little pregame with one of our larger affiliates at, in this case, it would have been 3:30 on Saturday. So I got there about 2:30 and walked out of there about 3:30, 3 o'clock. As you know, Dave, we have a longer than the history of radio postgame show to match the pregame show. And we did shorten it. It was really frustrating, especially after the second delay. I got one play in, and assured us that, no, there's no, as you know, the rule is if it's within 8 miles of a stadium, they start a 30-minute clock, and you have to wait 30 minutes, and if there's no lightning detected within that 8-mile radius, you can go. So they came out, and you assume that the weather service, which was on top of it, said would say, okay, we're good to go, let's go. Got one play in, ran off 8 seconds. And the referee blew his whistle. He said, there's been lightning detected within the 8-mile radius. Back to the locker room they go. So we had 3 delays collectively totaling just under 4 hours. You know, this happened to the Hawks about 15 years ago out in Tempe, of all places, where they had a desert thunderstorm, one of the rarities, lightning, flash flooding. As you know, there's nowhere for the water to go out there. Drew Tate, I remember, was the quarterback. And he broke his thumb in that game. Iowa went to Michigan the following week, lost a tough Big Ten opener, then didn't lose another game the rest of the year, and ended up in the Orange Bowl, the Capital One Bowl. So I'm hoping something like that happens again. Right. But there's a lot of work to be done between now and then.
Yeah, no doubt. But this was a much better offensive performance for the Hawkeyes. Talk about that in a minute. But so it's not just the broadcasters, obviously, who are affected in this kind of a situation. What do they have to do in terms of allowing the players sufficient time after these long delays to go back out and warm up again? And what about the fans? Because I know they have to clear the stadium, and it looked like at the end of the game, were there any fans in there, or were those just staff who were still in the stadium?
Well, working in reverse order, there were about 500 or 600 fans that came back. But keep in mind, last call in downtown Iowa City was around 1:30, and so the students all came back up the hill, which is about six blocks, and you know, they no doubt had been watching it on the Big Ten Network. So, well, let's go up and be a part of history, whatever that means. And I looked out there one time. They had on TV most of the men's basketball team was sitting in their cheering on Connor and Patrick McCaffrey, and at least Mom and Dad knew where they were. But there was probably 300-500 people, soaked to the bone that weathered the end of the game. The game was not in doubt. What they do once they decide to go, they put 12 minutes on the clock, and teams come out and they run through their cals. Dan knows what this is all about, and loosen up. The irony there is Iowa got four players back on offense Saturday night that they hadn't had, including their number one running back, their number one wide receiver, and two other receivers, and so those guys, they parked for the evening, because no doubt this is their first game, their first, missed most of the fall practice sessions, so they really had to be tightened up. But at 27-0 and that Iowa defense, they weren't going to give that game away. So it was just a twilight zone of an evening. We knew the rain was coming. We had no idea that the lightning was going to be as wicked. And I'm here to tell you, it was bad. And there were some real spider, daddy long legs type claws crawling across the nighttime sky on a number of occasions. So they certainly did the right thing by stopping the game three times.
Yeah, I can't imagine that as a player. That seems, that when I was watching the replay, it looked like you're watching a COVID game with nobody in the stands. Focusing back on the quarterback play, obviously, I watched the first two games pretty closely. I was in bed for the end of the last game. But Spencer Petras, didn't play well in the first couple games. Seemed to play a little bit better from what I saw last week. Where's everyone's heads at on the quarterback situation and the offense in general?
Well, I think, Dan, everybody took a big sigh of relief last week. My view on the quarterback, and this is better than anybody, it's always the most focused on position by the critics and those that have never played the position, but it is the most important spot on the football team. Iowa's offensive line is really young and had been beat up, but they got a lot better here in the first couple weeks of the season. They had two guys that hardly practiced at all in the fall. Two guys that they're really high on, Mason Richmond, the left tackle, which is a big vacancy in college football, and then left guard. They moved the right guard, Connor Colby, who's all Big Ten. They moved him to right tackle. They got a brand new center, and he's not Tyler Lindebaum, but they think Logan Jones is going to get there eventually. He jumped over from the defensive line in the offseason. So there's a lot of moving parts in the offensive line. And the first 2 weeks, both South Dakota State and obviously Iowa State stacked the box and dared Spencer Petras to beat him. And he got sacked a few times, got knocked around because of the inability of the offensive line to collectively get the job done. Well, they played much better now that they had a couple games underneath their belt. They played a lot better last week. Richmond has been back for 2 weeks now. The left guard, Justin Britt, the guy they were counting on to be there, is out for the year. He just can't stay healthy. So while they have a lot of disruptions personnel-wise, they're looking much better, and they'll need to be going into Big Ten competition this week at Rutgers, who's got a terrific defense. But I think Spencer's taken the brunt of the criticism unfairly. Now, he's a fifth-year guy. He gets it. He's a great kid. He's very articulate. You know, I remind people, this guy is, or Iowa's offense is run first, and then look for Sam Laporta and the wide receivers. Now, they've got a good young receiving core with Arlen Bruce and Keegan Johnson, they finally got Nico Reganey back last week. He had four catches. And Brody Breck, heralded high school recruit out of the Des Moines area, Ankeny, who can touch 96 miles an hour with his fastball, spent most of the fall, or spring and summer with the baseball team. So he's just now rounding into shape. He's 6'4", long arms. So I think they'll be okay going forward as long as they don't get injured.
I had the pleasure, Gary, of listening to your broadcast. I was working in my yard, putting chicken wire down to keep the skunks out of my yard. It's an exciting weekend during our bye week. And I'm listening to you call a baseball game against South Dakota State. That was
7-3, Dave.
Yeah, listening to you and Ed. Well, 5-3 in the fourth quarter. But this defense, and you've seen some great defenses over the years at Iowa, but this one, it seems like, I mean, everybody talks about the offense, understandably, they've only given up, 13 points in the first three games?
Correct. Yeah, they pitched a shutout last week, and they're giving up 4.3 points a game.
Wow.
I mean, that is, particularly with Iowa State's high-octane offense. And, you know, South Dakota State didn't win 11 games last year by accident. I mean, they've been in the playoffs 10 straight years, and they're strongest on the offensive side of the football. And it's just mind-boggling what this defense has done. We knew it was going to be a good defense. But Jack Campbell is just off the charts. I was remarking to somebody 2 weeks ago, the last time I saw a guy that big at 6'5", 247 pounds, that could rumble and roam sideline to sideline, was Dick Butkus. And he's on the Butkus watch list. I'm not saying he's Dick Butkus by far, but this kid is a film room freak. And if you go back and look at the safety where he grabbed the running back by the shoulder pad and dragged him through the end zone, that was all film study. Jack said, he said, I saw right away as soon as they broke huddle what they were going to do. I mean, that's just he's a brilliant kid academically. Was a great high school athlete in Iowa. Might have been a better basketball player in high school, but he is some kind of a centerpiece for that defense. They've got a senior in Seth Benson off one shoulder pad, and a real athletic kid in Jay Higgins, and Justin Jacobs took over for Dane Belton at the cashback. And he's a linebacker. He can really run at 6'4 and 230 pounds. So they've really got some athleticism in the middle. Up front, they got a lot of guys that you probably aren't familiar with name-wise, but they're all young and they're all aggressive. They got a kid from Barrington, Lucas Van Ness, who, I'm telling you, he's got big time written all over him. He's just a sophomore. And they got a kid named Louis Steck from LaGrange Park. They got a kid, Logan Lee, from Orion, Illinois. Noah Shannon's from Aurora. It's almost like an all-Chicago suburb team up front. They got eight guys that they rotate through there. And they can get pressure on the quarterback. And if you get past that front line, then you've got Campbell. And then on the back end, an All-American in Riley Moss, who came back this year. Kayvon Merriweather is a senior safety. They've really got some options. The new piece to the puzzle there, guys, is a kid named Cooper DeGene. He's a small town high school player from Iowa who was just a superstar athlete, can do everything. You know, four sport star, and this kid is a safety, but they'll run him at the cashback or at that nickel back. He's 6'1", about 210, and he can run. And he's had back to back interceptions now in the last two games. And this is a kid who's just carving out his career. I mean, he's a true sophomore. Didn't play much last year other than on special teams. But he is physical. He can run. And he really is a star in the making. So the other thing, Dave, you didn't mention was when you got, I think, the best punter in the Big Ten.
Oh, yeah.
Who can flip, not only flip the field position-wise, but bury an opposing offense back at the 8, 7, 6. In many cases, it's been at the 3 or 2. He's got 23 punts in three games, and 11 of them have died inside the 20. And I dare say half of those have been downed inside the 10. So their punt special teams or punt coverage teams have been just off the charts. And as you know, if you've got a good defense, that can make it a great defense.
No doubt. All right. So you got Rutgers this week. Michigan at home, Illinois on the road, Ohio State on the road before we'll see you guys out there Halloween weekend, homecoming for the Hawkeyes. How about Rutgers, though? They're 3-0.
They are. They've won a one-point game, a two-point game, and then hung 66 on Wagner College.
Yeah.
And as Kirk Ferentz says, a win's a win. Doesn't matter. And, you know, Greg Schiano is back for his second go-round there. And the strength of their team, ironically, is defense. So you got two top-10 ranked defenses trying to get after the other's offense and force some turnovers. Now, they are beat up a little bit. I say they. Rutgers is beat up, particularly at the quarterback position. We're not sure who they're going to start there, one of three. They've got a solid running back. They've got good receivers. They're playing a lot of first-year guys, though, on the offensive side of the football. They're playing a lot of first-year guys, first- and second-year guys defensively, too, but they've got key experience, or they've got experience in key positions, but they've got a tremendous sophomore defensive tackle named Aaron Lewis. He had 11 tackles last weekend. They've got a really good back end, defensive backs, with a number of seniors back there. They play that 4-2-5. Deion Jennings is a kid who I remember the last time Iowa was playing there. They had just recruited this youngster out of Sicklerville, New Jersey, a high school All-American, and he's now a senior. So they've got good backers. They also have a great punter from Australia. So it might be the best of the punters. It might be a special teams extraordinaire on Saturday. But, I mean, I like Iowa's chances. They've been a good road team, Dave, and I like their chances a lot better now based on what I saw offensively last Saturday. Now Rutgers, I mean, Nevada's not Rutgers, don't get me wrong. But I like the Hawks' chances to get out of the gate. And if they get to 3-1, then that Michigan game next week in Kinnick, thankfully it's an 11 o'clock kick. Not at night, but 11 o'clock mm-hmm. kick will really be filled with electricity.
Gary, always appreciate the time. Great catching up with you. Safe travels to Piscataway this weekend, and we will see you in just about a month.
Happy Halloween, huh? Okay.
There you go.
Dan, hey, good to see you. Good to hear from you. Take care, guys.
Hey, thanks very much. That's Gary Dolphin, the outstanding voice of the Iowa Hawkeyes, along with Ed Podolak. They've been doing the games for, I think I just saw, they just had their 25th anniversary together, and Iowa playing at Rutgers this week. Okay, so there's a little glimpse of what they went through this week. The Big Ten schedule actually starts with a Thursday night game. It's a non-conference game for Illinois playing at home against Chattanooga. And then, Dan, you got some other conference games this week. This is the first big weekend of conference play. Of course, probably the highlight, Wisconsin at Ohio State under the lights on Saturday night. Michigan hosting Maryland. Both those teams look good. And Minnesota plays at Michigan State, which is coming off a tough loss last week at Washington, as well as Iowa at Rutgers. Really curious to see that Wisconsin-Ohio State game. I know that everybody obviously is going to favor Ohio State in that one, but, you know, which... what are we going to see from Wisconsin? They look better. Graham Mertz looks a little more comfortable at quarterback this year. So I think that's an interesting one to watch, a team that a lot of people still like in the Big Ten West going against a team that obviously is right off the pace behind Georgia and Alabama in the polls.
Yeah, I think the best thing about college football is just seeing the teams progress from week one to week two to week three and then into conference play, because the teams just change so much. There's different guys from previous years, and they need to grow up a little bit. And once they hit their strides, you know, the teams that end up winning at the end of the year get better each week. So I think it's still early for all teams, including Northwestern. And I think the Ohio State and Wisconsin game will be a good barometer to see where, you know, frankly, both teams are at. So it's definitely interested to see that and other games in the Big Ten, as obviously Northwestern wasn't a great game to watch last week, but there just wasn't a lot of exciting games anywhere. So getting into conference play makes all the football fans happy.
And I actually think the Northwestern-Miami game is going to be a pretty good game this week, and it's certainly a big game as far as Northwestern's concerned, even though it's a non-conference game against a MAC team. All right, let's get to Super Joe's prediction of the week. Joe, what you got?
Prediction.
Super Joe's predictions.
All right, back on the winning track. You got it like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thankfully, somebody did.
Yeah. So last week we laid 3 points with Penn State on the road at Auburn, and they won quite handily.
Yes, they did.
The final score, 41-12.
Yeah, they look really good.
Yeah, they did look good. So this week I am shifting my focus, as you guys are, to the Big Ten divisional play. I'm going to East Lansing, where the Spartans are hosting the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Now, one thing I was looking up is updated odds to win the division, the Big Ten West division. I couldn't find that, but I did see, as far as winning the conference as a whole, Minnesota was just behind Wisconsin to win, you know, as far as Western divisional, you know, compatriots, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. So, Minnesota has outscored its opponents 149-17 this year. The problem? They've played New Mexico State, Western Illinois, and Colorado. Not really great competition. Michigan State lost 39-28 last week in Washington. I don't think that score is really indicative of how the game was. It was really out of hand for
most
of it.
Yes, it was.
Somehow, the Spartans are getting 3 points at home, and I'm going to take that home dog, and I'm going to ride it. I think Coach Tucker, that is going to get them back on track in a quick way, and the Spartans are going to not need the 3 points, but I'll take them anyways.
Minnesota's an interesting team, and Dan, I don't know if you've had a chance to see them yet, but they have a guy who's been a quarterback forever for them, and Tanner Morgan, and they have Muhammad Ibrahim is back, running back, coming back from a season-ending knee injury against Ohio State in their opener a year ago. He looks good again. It's a veteran team. They did lose their top receiver this week, Chris Ottman Bell. He's done for the year, but I think Minnesota, a team which you don't hear that much about compared to Wisconsin and Iowa in the Big Ten West, this might be their best chance to make some noise in the division this year. But obviously, this is a big game for them, one of their crossover games at Michigan State.
Yeah, I agree. You took the words out of my mouth. This is their best chance to win the West. I think they're a sleeper team. They're as experienced as anybody. Having Tanner Morgan there at quarterback is really helpful. They have a great offensive line and running game and a solid defense. I think they're frankly the dark horse, depending on where how Wisconsin plays throughout the year. I kind of see them as the favorites in the West.
All right, so Super Joe's going with Sparty this week.
That's right.
All right. Well, that's going to about wrap it up. Dan, I will see you, I trust, Saturday night under the lights at Ryan Field for the Miami Redhawks.
Absolutely.
All right. Sounds good. We'll talk to you again next week. Big thanks to Louis Vicaire from Wildcat Report for joining us. Thanks also to the voice of the Hawkeyes, Gary Dolphin, and Super Joe for his predictions. Don't forget, join us Saturday. We'll have the call for you from Evanston, the Wildcats, and Miami. Our pregame starts at 6, and Ted Albrecht and I will have the kickoff starting at 6:30. Now for Dan Persa, this is Dave Ennett. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you again next week on Collegiately Speaking.